Okay, good to see all you guys. Welcome, Paul, Alex, Judd, Oliver, Mark, Henry, Phyllis, and Erwin. And okay, I think my grandparents, they might not make it tonight because they just moved from their house to an apartment, and moving day was a day or two ago, so they're still in the midst of the process. Okay, we find ourselves on 15A on Tesvav Amud Aleph. And basically, here's what to expect from today. We're just basically going to first talk a little bit. We're talking about prophets previously. We're going to talk about the identity of the prophet Malachi, whether maybe it was just a kinoi, it was a nickname for a different prophet. We'll briefly return back to the topic of the female prophetesses and who are considered Nashim of Yafios. Then the Gemara will have a stint where we go back for a good chunk and actually make progress through the Megillah. And finally, the Gemara will go off on a tangent. It's going to start with the teaching of Rabbi Elazar in the name of Rabbi Chanina. And then, as the Gemara often does, once we learn something from this rabbi, the name of that rabbi on topic, the Gemara, just for fun, is going to give us miscellaneous teachings from that rabbi that the Gemara wants us to know. And now I'll take us, God willing, onto Tesvav Amud Beis. So we find ourselves, I would imagine it's still the first section in Art Scroll. It's Amar Rav Nachman. Okay, Amar Rav Nachman is 1, 2, 3, 4. It's the fifth wide line for those who are looking in the Tzuras HaDaf of the Gemara. And yeah, Henry got a confirmation. That's the first page in Art Scroll. Okay, great. Here we go. Amar Rav Nachman, Malachi ze Mordechai. So Rav Nachman suggests that the prophet Malachi is also Mordechai. Lama Mishnah Lamalach. So what? And then what? What is? Why is he called Malachi? So the reason is because it's a way of saying that he was Mishnah Lamalach. He was, you know, that's what he was the viceroy. That's what Yosef was. He became second to the king. Ay, Mitzvah. How can you say that he's Mordechai? Baruch Ben Neriah. Oh, I always mess up the names over here. I'm gonna mess this up. Sharyara, how do you pronounce his name? I don't have the for folks.
Saraya.
Saraya, thank you.
Saraya ben Maaseya.
Maaseya. Daniel Umordechai Bilshan Zachariah Malachi Kula Yavesh. So the fact that Mordechai and Malachi are counted as two separate individuals, basically that's a tiyufta. That's a nail in the coffin against our theory that they are one and the same person. It's like we have a running joke with someone. We have a friend, Leah, who always wants to see her friend, Kaylee. And so we our running joke is that she never actually shows up. Kaylee Lama Zavtani. And my theory is that they are one and the same person because we've never seen them in the same room at the same time. But once you have Mordechai, have the Alfei Avdalos, once you have Mordechai, and once you have Malachi on the same list, it's very clear that they are two distinct individuals. So, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yeshua and Karcha, Malachi Ze Ezra. So now that Malachi can't be Mordechai, who else can Malachi be? Maybe it's a name for another name for Ezra. How so? Well, okay, well, first of all, Chacham Malachi Shmuel Chacham say, we don't need to play all these games. His name is just Malachi, which I imagine is what most of us thought. Ara Nachman, Mistamra Keman Domer Malachi Ze Ezra. Rav Nachman, so again, back to Rav Nachman. I'm more compelled by the opinion that says the Malachi is actually just another name for Ezra. Dixiv in Nevi'os Malachi. So Malachi gives the following prophecy. Bagda Yehuda betoeva nesesa b'Yisrael b'Yerushalayim kihilel Yehuda kodesh Hashem asher ahav ubal bas el nechar. Right, so the pasuk says that Malachi is basically railing against the Jewish people for taking non-Jewish women. This is considered an abomination. It's considered an affront to God. It's a desecration of His name. Uman Efresh Nachrios.
Ezra. And who was the prophet that successfully got the Jews to stop intermarrying? That was none other than Ezra. Tiksev vayan shechenia ben yechiel mibnei ilayim vayomer leEzra anachnu malinu belahinu v'noshav nashim nachrios. So they all come to Ezra and they say, you know, ashamnu baganu gizanu, they're clapping al chait. And they say, oi, we've intermarried and now we have to do tshuva. So it seemed that since both these prophets are dealing with the same issue, they are known for dealing with the same issue, perhaps they are indeed the same person. Okay, the way we got that was because we thought it was Mordechai originally. Take it or leave it. You just go with the Chachamim, which is the majority opinion that Malachi is his own person. We don't need to tag him on to anyone else. Very good. Now, this next part is going to require a little bit of elaboration. We'll get to the end of the piece, and then we'll elaborate on, you know, why the heck we're doing this. Tanur Rabbanan. Arba Nashim Yaf Yaf Yosai Ba'olam. There were four beautiful women in the world. Sarah, Avigail, Racha, and Esther. So Sarah, wife of Abraham. Avigail, she was the wife of Nevil, but eventually comes to David, as we learned last week. Rachav Azona, Rachav, we learned also that she was the Zona, innkeeper or prostitute or both, and she marries Yehoshua. And of course, Esther, the main character here. Lama Damar Esther Yirak Rokes, Paisa Mapik Esther Ma'il Vashti. So according to the opinion that Esther was green, we learned this in the past as well, green meaning not attractive. So then there are those who take Esther off the list and they put Vashti in instead. Tanur Rabbanan, Rachav b'shmazinsa, Rachav through her name, one commits an act of znus. Yael b'kola, Yael was through her voice. Avigal b'sichrasa, Avigal through remembering her. Michal b'ashol, interesting, this now adds Michal, the daughter of Shol, to the list. Michal Bashol is famous for a number of things. Anyone know what Michal Bashol is famous for other than this? In the, yeah, Henry.
Oh. The thing with the window?
Oh, what are you referring to? You might be right.
The story with David when he escaped from, right?
Oh, right. Yes, in Tanakh. Yes, that's true. But in Chazal, in rabbinic literature, I'm add about Michal, that, I mean, I'm sure there's other things I'm just not aware of, that Micha Bashal, she wore tefillin. And Micha Bachachamim, and Chachamim didn't protest. So way back when, during Purim, when we did our study on Lo Yilvash, on cross-dressing, that was an important Gemara, that the rabbis did not decide to pick a fight when she decided to wear tefillin. So I was like, ah, oh, Rashi's daughters wore tefillin. I could do you one better. You go even further back to Micha Bashal. So Micha Bashal Buryasa, by seeing her, Ari Yitzchak, Kolmer Rachav Rachav Yad Nikri. Any man who says Rachav Rachav immediately has a seminal emission. Amarle Rav Nachman, I'm not Amir Rachav Rachav Velo Ichbasli. Rav Nachman says, well, you know, I said those words and it didn't affect me. Amarle Kikamina Biyotam Akira. Well, Shkoyach, you lived many, many years later in the future, so you didn't know who she was or who she looked like. So that's why it had no effect on you. Now, this is a very odd piece of Gemara. Why, you know, you look through rabbinic literature, we're usually pretty concerned with the laws of tznius. We're more interested in spiritual pursuits. We're not interested in, we don't care what people look like. So why is it important for Chazal to go out of their way to start, I mean, you know, think about it, like, you know, put it in very, very blunt terms. Like, they're basically like, you know, rating women over here. What is this, like locker room talk going on? So Chas v'Shalom. There is an explanation I wanted to share with you, and I'll read for you as follows. Basically, the reason that we have that it's valuable for us to know that all of these women were considered beautiful women is because it highlights certain lessons for us. So here are some of the lessons that could come from this. I think actually it might come up in the Nova Yehuda, is where this might be quoted somewhere. So here we go. Sarah, why is it important to know that Sarah was an attractive woman? Lehodia kamatznua koroshaya Avram Avinu shalros yofeha me'ol lehistakva leha. It's to teach us the what do you want to call it? the piety of Avram Avinu, that it took him so long to realize that she was an attractive woman. It was only when they were finally going to go to Egypt that he realized, oh, you know, maybe I should tell him that she's my sister, because it took me this long to figure out that my wife is attractive. So that's why it's important for us to know about Sarah. Vis-a-vis Rachav and Abigail, Rachav and Abigail are specifically to warn someone not to follow after lust. Like the story we had recently with David HaMelech, that he followed his lust toward Abigail. And of course, he ultimately followed his lust toward Bathsheba. So they're there, Dafka, to warn us about that. And then finally, with Esther, it's to teach us how much Hashem cares for us. That Hashem ensured that she was attractive in order so Achashverosh would take her and she'd be able to advocate for the Jewish people. Lamadam or Vashti, and according to the opinion, that was Vashti instead of Esther that made the cut. Laharos nifloosa shal kadosh baruch hu shemarosh shahayus Vashti yafa kolkach and came mitzad a tevel lohayel lahavos Esther im kozeb barach neshmayim nasachem be'ena. So it teaches that even though Vashti may have been more attractive in Achashverosh's eyes than Esther, it just comes to highlight the miracle that nonetheless Hashem ensured that Esther was taken by Achashverosh in the end of the day, and that she was in the right place at the right time to advocate for the Jewish people. So, you know, I like that approach because it kind of addresses all of them. But, you know, if you're still walking away kind of like feeling, I don't quite get this, well, we're in the same company. I'm not sure if you're in good company, but we're in the same company. Okay, so that was that piece of Gemara there. Let's look back on the page where we left off. Let's see. Mordechai. Okay, Rabosai. So now we are done with the women right now. Right? We talked about the women prophets. We're not done with women in general. I mean, I'm just saying topically in the Gemara. We're not getting rid of all of you. Don't worry, Toby. Mordechai Yadas Kosher Nasa. So now we are returning back to our main program, to our feature presentation, in which right? What are we middle of doing? We're middle of going through the Megillah and interpreting the various psukim and mining the hidden messages. So let's see, where is this being quoted from? This is we're in Perek Dalid, the first pasuk in Perek Dalid. Mordechai Yada is called Shir Nasa. So Mordechai knew all that which transpired. If you look at the rest of the pasuk, it's just important to know what the rest of the pasuk says. The Gemara does this very often, that the important part of the pasuk is actually not quoted in the Gemara, and it just assumes you know the rest of the pasuk by heart. So thankfully, we have the Torah or HaShalim. So the pasuk goes, and Mordechai yada es kol asher na'asa, and Mordechai became known to him that which was done. Vayikra Mordechai es begadav, vayilbash sak ve'efer. So Mordechai tears his garments, and he wears sackcloth and ashes, vayetzei besoch ha'ir, and he goes out into the city, and so he goes out and he cries a great cry. I'm not sure if we see it here, but elsewhere, I think there's a connection between the Zaka Gedola Mara to Esav, the Zaka Gedola Mara. I'm not sure if it should be somewhere here in the Gemara, how Esav lets out this huge cry after Yaakov deceives Yitzchak for the blessings. So Esav comes and lets out a Tzaka Gedola Mara, and it's almost the same kind of phraseology used. So the idea that Haman was a descendant of Esav, and Haman thereby caused the Jewish people now to let out a Tzaka Gedola Mara, it was divine justice, so to speak, for the pain and anguish that Yaakov inflicted upon Haman's great-great-great-great Zaydi, Esav Harasha. Okay? Great. So now we know the pasuk. Looking back in the Gemara says, "My Amar, what did Mordechai say when he cried out?" Amar, it wasn't just a primal scream, but he said something. So Amarav, Amar Gava Haman Me'Achashverosh. Haman has outdone Achashverosh. He's gone one step higher. Achashverosh, he never, you know, he was an anti-Semite. He didn't really like the Jews, but he wasn't rash enough to try to kill us. Haman is much bolder, and this is terrible. Ushmu Amar Gover Macha Ila Mimachu Tata. He lamented that the king on high has supplanted the king below, which is an euphemism for saying the opposite. We see this many times that we say, we refer to the Jewish people as by their Sonehen, by their haters, because we don't want to directly say the Jewish people are being destroyed. The similar idea here, it would be irreverent to say that the king below supplanted the king on high. So he just says the king on high supplanted the king below, but as a euphemism that from his perspective, it will look as if the king below was able to overcome God's plans, where in reality, of course, God was punishing the Jewish people and he enabled that gezeirah to take place. Okay. Next pasuk we are interpreting, Vatischalchal Hamalka. What an odd word. What does Vatischalchal mean? So, my Vatischalchal, I'm glad you asked because that's what the Gemara asks. What is Vatischalchal? I'm a Rav Ship, here's Sanita. So, Esther was in such great fear that she immediately menstruated. She immediately became a Nida. So what's interesting is you also have this idea of Dam Chimud. In Hilchos Nida, this idea that a woman will get so excited that she will actually menstruate. And it comes up in Hilchos Nida when a woman's getting married and she gets proposed to. Do we have to be worried about Dam Chimud, about her getting very excited to be married? So it's a similar kind of idea. Rayirmiya said that we learned this in Makos. I mean, you don't have to know from the Gemara. Hopefully you don't know it in reality, but someone is so scared that immediately they just relieve themselves on the spot. So that's what happened to her. And it comes from like chalim chalim, so like a hole. That's what Vatischa Chal is. Next pasuk. Vatikra Esther Lahasach. And Esther called to Hasach. Who is Amarav? Hasach zed Daniel. So who is Hasach? Hasach is Daniel. Ulam enikro shmo Hasach. Well, why is Daniel called Hasach? Shechatchuhu midulaso. Either because he was cut from his greatness. Two ways to understand that. One is he was demoted. Another is, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Daniel could have possibly become a eunuch. And so if he was a eunuch, that's what it can mean, hasach, that it was cut. Ushmul amar shekol divrei malchus nechtachin alpiv. Or according to Shmuel, the opposite, that Daniel wielded a lot of power and that everything, he could make commands and it would be executed according to his wishes. This raised a few questions. One question is, if Daniel wielded such influence, why would he need Esther? Why couldn't he just advocate for the Jewish people? A second question, which I haven't seen anyone deal with, it seems very odd, maybe I just didn't dig around enough, is that in an earlier Gemara, we had an opinion that Daniel was Memuchan, who made the suggestion to Achashverosh to kill Vashti. So if you're saying Hasach is Daniel, then you can't really say Memuchan is also Daniel. I mean, there seems to be a very... This is a classic rule. I'm not a big Tanakh person. I mean, of course, I love Tanakh, but I'm not, I don't teach a lot of Tanakh. But there's generally a principle in how Chazal read Tanakh about the, I don't know what they call it, the preservation of characters, in which, a story, for whatever reason, you like to have recurring characters. So there seems to be this huge inclination for Chazal that they want to keep Daniel in the narrative. So any like random minor character in the story, we're like, oh, maybe it's Daniel. But then you have to ask, why isn't Daniel doing more for the Jewish people then? That's the big question. Okay. If he's demoted, it makes sense why he doesn't wield much influence. Okay. Just any thoughts on that? I don't have a good approach. Any thoughts? All right. I'm leaving you with more questions today than answers. Moving forward, Ladas Mazev Amazev. So the pasuk was, let's take a look at Zion. Vatikra Esel Hasach mi Sarise Hamelech. Oh, right. So it makes sense that Hasach was one of Sarise Hamelech. He was a eunuch. So that fits with Daniel being a eunuch as well. Asher Hemi Lefanevet Saviyah Mordechai Ladas Mazev Amazev. So they want to know, it's always like a weird pasuk, Ladas Mazev Amazev. It's such like an odd formulation. So what does that mean? Amar Rebbe Yitzchak Shochalo Shema Arisa Achamishi Chumshi Torah. Esther sent to Mordechai, maybe the reason that we are being punished is because we violated the Chamishi Chumshi Torah, the five books of Moses. It's interesting because that's actually, I believe, a reference to the two tablets of the Luchos. Right. Anyway, yeah, Henry, confirmed? Okay, so it's referring to the Luchos. Zev, zev. This tablet and that tablet. So it's interesting that she says Chamishi Chumshi Torah. Maybe Esther was of the opinion that Moshe Rabbeinu already received the entire Torah at Har Sinai and not just the Ten Commandments. That's a whole sugya unto itself. Okay. It's like a funny thing. She's like, oh, we're being punished. It must have been that we violated the Chamishi Chumshi Torah. You know, you look sometimes in the Haredi world, they'll say, like, you know, after a tragedy happens, they'll be like, oh, must mean because the women aren't keeping sneas, and that's why you know this terrible tragedy befell us. So, you know, Esther is being very politically correct here. She's like, no, maybe it's any mitzvah in the Torah we could have violated, or all the mitzvahs in the Torah. So she doesn't want to single out any one of them. I don't know if that's her motivation. Okay, moving forward. Ve'agidu le'Mordechai es divrei Esther. So Asach relays the words of Esther to Mordechai, in which she refuses to go to Achashverosh. Ihu lo azalagabe. Ah, so why is it that she didn't want to go to him? Mikan she'ema shivin al kalkala. So to teach us that you should avoid being the bearer of bad news if you can. And what some of Farshim point out is that it says vayagidu, which means it wasn't just Hasach, it was a group of people. So that way they, not one person could be pegged as the bearer of bad news. They all just diffuse the responsibility when they relayed the message over. Okay, it's an interesting diak. Next pasuk, Lech Kenosis Kol HaYehudim. So this is the rallying cry on Purim morning when shuls try to get people to come and learn Torah. They say, Lech Kenosis Kol HaYehudim. Come to Yeshivas Mordechai at Tzadik, learn some Torah in the morning before you go out and get drunk and do revelry. So, Adasher Lo Kadas, and she's going in Shelo Kadas. So, I believe in context, what that's referring to is that she was going to the king uninvited, and that's against the law. That's punishable with a capital punishment. So, Amar Rabbi Abba, what's it mean, Shelo Kadas, not according to the law? Right, Rameir Relic, you came over to me on Shabbos. We were discussing this maybe 2 weeks ago. So it said up until now, Esther was taken by Achashverosh, and as a whole sugya, we're talking about maybe she was karka olam, she was passive, and she wasn't really, you know, involved in the intimacy. But when she went forward to Achashverosh to make her request, so then she was an active participant. And that's why, up until now, the rule is that if God forbid, a woman is raped, so then she's still permitted to her husband because she didn't willingly engage in the act. But here, where Esther was a willing participant in the sexual act, so then she became not only forbidden to the adulterer, but which would be Achashverosh, because she was married to Mordechai, but now she's also Asr Labaila, she's also forbidden to her husband. And this is what it means when it says, Chasher Avarati, Avarati, for I am surely lost. Kishem Shavarati mi beis Abba, just as I have become lost from my father's home, Kach Ove Mimcha, so too I have been lost from you, Mordechai, as well. To which Tosfos asked the following question. Look in Tosos, Kishem Shavati, Mi Beis Abba, Kach Abadi Mucha, Vim Tomar, Amai Lohaya Megarsha. I got a great solution over here, Tosos says. Mordechai, you know, you're a Talmud Chacham, right? You could write a get. So, new, grab two people, grab two witnesses, Eni Masira Karsi, Eni Chasima Karsi, both opinions, great. Give her a get. It doesn't need to be a whole public pronouncement. And that way, Esther is not going into a situation where she's, God forbid, committing znus, committing adultery. So, right, in Torah, my lohay megarsha, demutar sachsi rena, then he'd be able to take her back once the coast is clear. Good question, right? To which Tosus answers, Yesh lomar lefishachol maisa getu al pi edim vayare pen yisfarsim adavar l'malchus. Because here's the issue, right? You're not allowed to, you have to be married to someone in order to have intimacy with them, according to halacha. So what would have to happen? Remember how we learned that Esther would go to Achashverosh and then come back to Mordechai? So, you know, what would happen is you'd have to give her a get, and then you have to remarry her, and then give her another get. So you had to keep getting witnesses. Maybe one day one witness wouldn't be available. You know, like all these millions of gittin every single day, the word would eventually get out. And then all their plans would just be tarnished at that point. However, we're not going to go too far into the sugya, but the Rashba raises a very interesting question. The Rashba says, ask the question. There's a halakha. If you look at the Mishnah Gittin on Pevava Amid Aleph, generally you need witnesses on a shtar. The witnesses essentially are there to validate the get. And one of the purposes they serve is that if the husband were to claim that the get was a forgery, the two witnesses can say, we were there, we signed on it, we know it's a legitimate get. So, however, if the husband himself writes the get, he is the author of the get. Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin. He should know how to do that. So then there's an opinion that you don't even need witnesses, because it's like hodas bal din kmei edim dam, that there's a principle in halacha that when I admit something in court pertaining to myself, it's better than 100 witnesses. That's an hyperbole, because 100 witnesses is as good as two witnesses in court. So the question is, why couldn't Mordechai himself just write to get? He wouldn't necessitate witnesses, and that way he can remain permitted to Esther. It's a good question, right? Get a little halacha in here. Good question? Yeah? Do we follow the question? Okay. So the answer that some of the Achronim give based on the Torah's Gittin is that when do we say Hodas Baldin Kmeidin Dami? When is my word taken on face value in court? When I, you know, if I admit, Henry, I owe you $100, so since it's a detriment to me and me alone, so then it's a, then Hodas Baldin Kmeidin Dami works. The issue is that divorcing her would have ramifications for marrying a Kohen. She would be able to marry a Kohen because she'd be a Grusha. So his admission is actually affecting somebody else. And since it's affecting somebody else, therefore it would not be considered valid get for him to write on his own. Okay, we'll leave that all for the side. But anyway, there's an interesting discussion to Rishonim him about why Mordechai did not divorce Esther, and that way we wouldn't have to run into this scenario over here. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara. How are we doing on time? 7:35. Okay, we're doing fine. Back to the Gemara. Thank you, Henry. Vayavor Mordechai. So, you know, what's it mean? And he passed. So, Amar Rav, Shehevir Yom Rishon Shel Pesach B'Tainus. So, that he scheduled a fast day on the first day of Pesach. So, not on Tainus Esther, on the first day of Pesach. Ushmul Amar, the Avar Aruk Arkuma Demaya, that he passed over a body of water in order to get the word out. So he really worked to get the word out in order to have people fast and pray for Esther. Good. Moving on to the next. So Avar in the second use of the word is to pass over something. And the first use is to be Oiver, is to violate something. He like violated Pesach because you're not supposed to fast on Shabbos and Yontif. In fact, by the way, we did this we learned about it, Tirchon Tzibura a long time ago. We learned, I think the Pri Chadash or Yaakov Emden, they talked about how if davening goes too long on a Shabbos morning and you don't get to your meal until after Chatzos, so then in your zealous prayers, you've fasted and you've violated Shabbos by doing so. You could just eat breakfast before davening? Well, there's a question. Halachically, you're supposed to have breakfast before davening. I've come to shul, and then the folks at the 7 a.m. are very nice people, and they offer me a scotch. And I'm like, this is like the ultimate example of something that I can't have before davening. It literally has no nutrition, you know, like no nutritional value for me. It's not gonna, I mean, arguably maybe it could help me get through davening. But you know, it's one thing to have if you need your coffee, you need a quick biscuit just to put something in your stomach, but to have a scotch, that's purely for enjoyment. So okay, we'll leave that. Moving forward.
Scotch will help you get through the rabbi's sermon.
Yeah, exactly. Very good, Erwin. I shouldn't put down scotch in your presence. This is, I think, the third time we're seeing this drasha. But now we're up to it. And so on the third day, Esther wore royalty. Big day, Malchus Mivayla. I should say she wore royal clothing. What's it mean she wore royalty? That she was wearing royalty of God. She was wearing the Holy Spirit. She's wearing the divine spirit. So we see the notion of one could be clothed in Ruach HaKodesh, in divine spirit, divine inspiration. Great. Bar Rabbi Elazar. Ah, Sir Rabosai. Now that we quoted a teaching from Rabbi Elazar, Amar Echanina, we're going to have a few other teachings that Rabbi Elazar taught in the name of Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, la'olam al tihi birchas edyo kala beinecha. The bracha of someone who has inferior status should not be light in your eyes. Shari shnei gedolei hador birchim shnei hediotos v'skai behem. For there are two great leaders in a generation. Each one respectively received a bracha from someone of lesser status than them, and they were happy that they received it because it paid off. The Elohim, David and Daniel. David, the Barche Arvoda, the Siva Yom Arvoda El HaBelech. So this is in the context where David HaMelech counts the Jewish people, and God's like, you know, have your choice of how you want to die. And then David says, I'll put my hand, we say this in Tachin at the beginning, you know, I'll put my fate in the hands of God. God brings a plague, and thankfully they result, they bring an offering, there's a blessing, and everything works out in the end of the day. Daniel, the Barchi Daryavesh, the Daryavesh blessed Daniel, you know, it sounds kind of like a cynical thing that he says. The Siv, Elohacha di Ant Palach Le Betadira, the God who you are constantly serving, who Yishizi Vencha, he'll be the one who redeems you, he'll be the one who saves you. So yeah, you can almost read it as like a cynical thing, like, you know, oh, you're a God who you're always worshiping, he'll save you. But it was a blessing. Another teaching, the opposite now, don't let the curse of one of inferior status be lighted in your eyes. Shari Avi Melech kilas Sarah, for Avi Melech cursed Sarah. You ever wonder why Yitzchak becomes blind later in life? You know, I mean, obviously we could say it was a health deficiency, but the Torah doesn't usually enumerate for us people's health problems. So when the Torah tells us that Yitzchak became blind later in life, it's to teach us something deeper. And it's to teach us, actually, according to Chazal, that it was a consequence of a curse that Avimelech gave Sarah. Avimelech gave Sarah, Hinehu lechak sus einayim. He shall be for you a covering of the eyes, because Avimelech was duped into thinking that Sarah was the sister of Avraham, and because the wool got pulled over his eyes, he, when he was giving them the gifts, he kind of stuck one toward them as well. Niskai and Bizarra, and that curse came to fruition, not to her, to Avraham, but to their child, Yitzchak. But he's a kan Yitzchak, but so that when Yitzchak became older, his eyes began to lose their sight. Interesting. Okay. Next teaching. Another teaching in the name of Rabbi Chanina. Everything we're doing till the end is just miscellaneous teachings from Rabbi Elazar in the name of Rabbi Chanina. And a number of them are actually quite famous. So God and man, you can't even compare them. But when it comes to a man, someone of flesh and blood, First, they put the pot on the stove, and then they put water in that pot. However, God first creates the water, and then he creates the kli, the vessel that holds the water. The kaimash nemar, the kol tito hamon mayim bishamayim. And you look at the continuation of the pasuk Yod Ches, by Yala Nisim Ikse Ha'aretz, and then God raises clouds to receive the water that's already up there. The clouds are up there, and then the water goes in them. Okay, we could talk about the chicken before the egg over here, but that's what we see from the pasuk. This next one, actually, let me make sure I have what I want over here. This next one's pretty ironic. This next one is a famous one. Fama Rabbi Lotzer Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Lotzer said in the name of Rabbi Chanina, Kol HaOmer Davar Shem Omro, anyone who teaches something and attributes it to the person who they heard it from, maybe Geula LeOlam, they bring redemption to this world. Shemar Batomer Esther Lamech B'Shem Mordechai, because we see that Esther brought the message in the name of Mordechai, which resulted in Mordechai getting recognized by Achashverosh. So what's very ironic about this? It's very ironic about this theme is that many people will just say, Kol Omer Davar Shem Omer, maybe Gula Ola. And they won't actually quote Relozar in the name of Rabbi Chanina, who said it. So they, ironically, and then Henry, I know what you're about to point out, that they're not the first ones, right? Oh, no, sorry, I think you're about to say something. So the ironic part is that, what does this phrase mean? That there's a value to, if I heard an idea, so like I just put, remember we did the flag topic recently about flag, those who are in the Monday night class, we do contemporary issues. We talked about flags in Judaism. So I just published the essay on Flag Day on this past Tuesday. And I put in the footnote, Rabbi Naftali Wolf made a good ha'ara to me. So I said, you know, rather than me present as my own idea, I made sure to give him attribution in there. So that's the idea of giving attribution, basically giving credit where it's due. But it's so funny because people often quote this statement without saying which rabbi actually taught it. Now, if you look.
But it's also in Pirkei Avot quoted in somebody else's name, right?
Exactly. That's what I thought you were going to say before, Henry. Right. So that's the funny part. Wait a minute. It's like the most ironic thing. These Amoraim who come a generations later than the Tanaim, Pirkei Avos is Mishnayos. So that's where it originated from. These Amoraim are ironic. It would see on the face of it, ironically, they're stealing this statement about attributing credit, and they're not attributing credit to the original person they heard it from. So, you know, Mepharshim trying to say that maybe they weren't aware of the Mishnah and Avos, or they forgot who they heard it from. There's different ways, but I mean, it's just really funny. Like you would think this would be the thing that we know who actually said it. So it's kind of ironic. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Moving forward, we're almost at the end. Vamar Rav Lozer Amar Rabbi Chanina. Tzadik Avad Lado. Ah, this is a very powerful idea. Tzadik Avad Ladoro. Tzadik Avad Ladoro Avad. Mashal Adam Sha'avda Lo Margos Kol Makom Shi Margos Shma Lo Avda Ela Lebaila. So this teaches a very important idea that when a tzaddik is lost, he's not truly lost, but Ladoro Avad, he's only lost to his generation. And the mashal that's given is a person who loses a pearl. So any place where that pearl is found, Kol Makom Shi Margolishma, anywhere it's found, it's still called a pearl. But Lo Avda Ela Lebaila, it's just that it was lost to the Baal. So the tzaddikim, when they're taken from this world, it's not that they are truly gone. They are still tzaddikim. They still are somewhere. Unfortunately, we don't have them in our presence. And this idea doesn't pertain strictly to tzaddikim, but the idea is that even if someone is not here, we still recognize that they are somewhere, they are intact, and they are doing well, even if they're not in our presence. Just like the pearl that becomes lost to its owner. Okay. Next. Kolza Einenu Shavali. So Haman says, when he sees Mordechai is not bowing down, everything I have is not worth it if this Jew is not going to bow down to me. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Chanina, B'shashara Haman is Mordechai Yoshi B'shar HaMelech. When Haman saw Mordechai sitting in the gate of the king, Amar kol zeino shavali. He said, everything I have is worthless. Kedrachista darachista. Zeba prosboli. This one comes with osher. He comes with wealth. Zeba biprosboti. And this one comes with anias. This one comes with impoverished. Amar apapa. And they would refer to Haman as the slave who got sold for loaves of bread. Now, what is this Gemara talking about? So if you look in the Yalkut Shmoni quotes a very fascinating Medrash, which basically talks about how during some Persian conquest, apparently once upon a time, Haman was a general for the Persian military, and Mordechai was a general as well. Don't ask me how this worked out. I'm confused as well. So when they allocated a budget to Haman, they allocated a budget to Mordechai. So Haman went ahead and he wasn't careful and he just spent all of his money recklessly. And then he realized that he didn't have a budget left to afford rations to give his troops. So he goes to Mordechai and strikes a deal and says, Mordechai, it'd be really great if you let me some of your money. Which Mordechai says, "Eining alav mecha ala im kein timkor esnaf shechel esnaf shechel le'ev." I won't give you the bread. I won't give you the money unless you sell yourself to me as a slave. I guess eventually, when Haman got back, he didn't keep to his end of the bargain. But everybody would then refer to him as the slave of Mordechai, because of this story. And so when Haman would see Mordechai sitting there, it would really burn him every time he saw him there. So that's why he was very displeased with Mordechai. The Chol Zeinu Shavli, another interpretation, it's to teach us that all of the wealth that was hidden away of Haman was etched in on his heart. When he saw Mordechai there, he said, "This is all worthless to me." So what does it mean that all of his wealth was etched in on his heart? So one interpretation is that he had information there about maybe some codes to get to the safe. Maybe his accounting was over there, some kind of important information to get to his wealth. The other idea, which Maharal who gives, that actually this is what I thought was pshat when I read it. Maharal says that he always had money in his heart and he cared for material wealth. And when he saw Mordechai, who represented spirituality and anti-materialism, that's what really disappointed him. And that's what made him very angry with Mordechai. Very good. Any questions, Rabosai? Okay, that brings us to the end of today. Just a reminder, I think, Gloria hasn't been able to log on for a while. I know she's recovering from a surgery. The recovery is a little bit more difficult than expected. So I know she's usually on this year. So just, keep her in mind. She's accepting visitors. And if anyone else is missing from the year that hasn't been here in a while, do let me know. I try to do my best to keep track. So does anyone notice anyone who hasn't been on in a while? Okay, keep your eyes out. Feel free to email me if in case anyone hasn't been here in a while. And I'm always happy to just check in and see how people are doing. Okay, have a wonderful evening, everyone. Good learning together. I'm wishing you all a good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. Thanks.
Toby, you're muted, but it looks like you're trying to say something.
Yeah, but it has nothing to do with the class. Can I call you right after the class?
Sure. Okay.
All right.